How many of you have ever been in such a place that you wanted to run away from it all? You wanted to say, you know what, I'm done. You wanted to run away from it all, even God. Anybody ever been there? Yeah, that's a tough place, isn't it? That's a tough place. Many people have those moments. I did a search on the internet a couple weeks ago around that question. And as I read some of the blogs, they are very, very telling. They give the reasons that many feel that way, many reasons why people want to run away, especially from God. They feel overwhelmed by disappointment or by their circumstances. Things just didn't turn out the way they thought it would. They feel out of control. They don't feel big enough or strong enough to really meet the circumstances where they find themselves. They feel devalued by loved ones, those that they've trusted. They feel bullied by enemies. They feel haunted by secrets. Personal battles that no one knows about. It makes them feel defeated, tired, just worn out. You ever want to run away? David wants out. The great King David. Psalm 139 is my text for this morning. Psalm 139 was birthed in David's personal chaos. I never knew this until I started reading it about a month and a half ago. And I just kept reading it over and over and over again. And because I was anticipating this Sunday, I thought, you know what? We just need a feel-good Sunday. You know, feel good. You know, good text. You know, something that's going to really encourage us. Thought Psalm 139, because I always get warm, fuzzy feelings whenever Nate sings his song on Psalm 139. So that's what I was going to do. It's a warm text. It's been a busy, busy season, warm text to encourage our hearts. After about 2 weeks into reading, I thought, this isn't saying what I wanted it to say. There were more questions that were rising up within me that I didn't have answers for, and I thought, I never realized this. And it was just dealing with the texts. And I thought, well, surely I'm missing it somewhere. And then I started reading commentaries and reading. They were saying what I thought it should say. But then I kept going back to the text, and I thought, no, it's not saying that. It's not saying that. So finally I said, Lord, I don't know what I'm going to do December 27th. And I got this distinct impression, stay with it. Stay with Psalm 139. And so I did. I said, Lord, if I'm going to stay with Psalm 139, you're going to have to show me really what's at the heart of this, because it's really going contrary to where I thought it was going to go, to where I thought David was writing. See, Psalm 139 was really rooted in a lot of personal chaos. It was written out of a very dark period of David's life. We don't know what that period was, in all fairness, but you see indicators of it within the text, which we will take a look at. But he was in a very dark and conflicted place. He's having what I would call a Jacob moment, where he wants to wrestle with God. He's having a Jonah moment, where he wants to run from God. And I know, he's David. He's not supposed to feel that way. But everyone has those moments. Everyone does. His enemies were overwhelming him. You can see that in verses, I think it's 19 through 21. And we'll see also indicators that his inner desires were haunting him. They were calling to him. There's this desire that says, God, if I could get away, I would. And David wrestles with these realities and he considers his options. And as he does, he concludes, I can't run away. I can't throw in the towel. What good would it do? What good would it do if I were to try to run away, because I can't hide my secrets from you, God? I can't hide those secrets. Verse 1, he starts out, he says, Oh Lord, you have searched me. And you know me. Now, what does God know about him? You know when I sit down, when I rise, and everything in between is the idea. Not only that, but you perceive or you discern my thoughts from afar. That's creepy. God knows what you're thinking even before you have enough awareness to articulate words or thoughts. He knows what the thoughts are rooted in. You perceive my thoughts from afar, my motives and my inclinations, the good thoughts and the dark ones. You know when I'm playing the poser and when you know when I'm being the real deal. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all of my ways, even the creepy ones. You're never surprised. Before a word is spoken on my tongue, you know what it's going to be. You know it completely. God, He's saying, you know my front stage and my backstage. You know my basement and my attic. You know my closets and every nook and cranny in my house of my life. And I can't hide anything from you. I can't hide anything from you. We are transparent before God, whether we want to be or not. He says, I cannot hide my secrets from you. He goes on to say, I can't run away from your presence either. In verse 5, he says, you hem me in. You hem me in. The idea there is of squeezing. You hem me in from behind and before. And God, I don't like it, for it's a very negative imagery. It's the imagery of a city that is besieged, that is under siege by an opposing army. He says, God, I don't like this. He's conflicted. He's conflicted. Yet, you see a change of tone. You see all kinds of movements within the psalm. Yet, you have laid your hand, not your fist, not your wrath. You didn't go and get the Board of Education to apply it to the seat of understanding. You've laid your hand upon me. There's this imagery of a firm but gentle presence. This is not the hand of an oppressor. This is like the hand of a father, is what he's saying. You've laid your hand upon me. In spite of everything you know about me, in spite of everything you know about what's going in every nook and cranny of my life, Father, you've never walked away. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, and not wonderful in the sense of warm, fuzzy feelings. It's wonderful in the sense of it's inconceivable. I cannot understand the presence of anyone who I can't run away from. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. I can't hide from you even if I wanted to. I don't get that. But such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go or where can I run or where can I escape from your presence, from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence or literally your face? Where can I run away, God? Why would he want to run away? He wants to throw in the towel. He's conflicted. He's conflicted because deep within his own heart, there's this desire to say, I want to just go off and do my own thing. I'm tired of this God thing. I'm tired of this gift thing where I'm the king. I'm just tired. I'm tired. It's too difficult. This phrase, where can I flee from your presence, is the same phrase that's used to describe Jonah's rebellion. When Jonah ran away, he was supposed to go to Nineveh, but he said, I'm not going to Nineveh. I don't even like those people. God says, well, you need to go anyhow. I don't like them, God. I don't want anything to do with them. I'm going to go to Tarshish. They're my people. Well, we all know how that worked out for him. Everywhere he goes, God's face is there. not his shoulder, not, he's not in his peripheral vision, he's not behind him, he's not behind God, he's not seeing his back, his face. Everywhere he goes, his face is right there. His face. That which communicates his presence, his attentiveness, that which communicates the fact and the realities of I'm here. Not just in body, but I'm here in presence. I see you each and every place where you are, each and every place where you want to run from, each and every secret that you're trying to hide. My face is right there. Right there. He didn't like it. Why? It threatens his own self-determination. It threatens our own self-determination. It threatens my desire for anonymity. After all, we are autonomous beings, aren't we? We want to say, I want to go do what I want to do. I don't want anyone challenging what I want to do. I don't want anyone challenging what I think or what I'm saying. I just wanted to be able to define reality as I want reality to be. He says, but with God, I can't do that. I can't do that. Verse 8, if I go up into the heavens, into the stars that he sees, if I go to another planet, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, if I go to the deepest parts of the ocean, if I go to the bottom of the Mariana Trench, what do I find? Your face. You are there. If I rise up on the wings of the dawn, if I go into the farthest east, if I go as far east as what one can go, if I go to the far east, if I settle on the far side of the sea, the far west, even there, your hand, I love this, your hand, not your fist, your presence, not your wrath, your hand will guide me. It's an interesting way to put it. It will guide me, directing, applying pressure, persuading. Your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. There is no place I can run away and hide. There is no secret I can bury deep enough that God's face is not there. You hear the conflicted heart? He's saying, I want to be free. I want to be free, yet wherever I go, you're there. But not only are you there, you're holding me. You're holding me. I don't feel like God's holding me in those moments. It doesn't matter what you feel like. There are many things that we feel like that aren't true. But you're holding me. I want to be free, yet wherever I go, you're holding me. I want to be free, yet, but if I am, and you can get the sense from the text, if I am free, what happens if there is no hand that's there? What happens if I do run away? There is no presence of God there. What happens if I do run away? What happens if I could bury a secret deep enough that there would be no presence of God? There's a sense of, he realizes, I could be very abandoned. That's terrifying. To think that maybe, perhaps, if we play with it in our mind, because we don't really know the nature of God, the character of God, to think that if I were to run away, how terrifying would it be for me to be able to run away to such a place where there is no God? How many of you ever wanted to run away from your parents? When you're kids, I remember walking down the street on Pocatello in Roland Heights, California. 2446 Pocatello, Roland Heights, California. You can still see it on Google Maps. The pool I helped put there was there. I remember I packed a bag and I was walking down the sidewalk and I just kind of kept glancing over my shoulder. I didn't want to go back, but yet I did not want to be able to get away from my parents. There was that sense of conflictedness. I didn't know what to do with that. I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back. I'm angry. For good reason. I don't remember what the reasons were, but I'm sure that they were good. My character was so noble that I would not do this foolishly. Unwarranted. But yet, what happens if I do really get away? Wow. Totally on your own. You know, that's what hell is going to be like. Where you are totally and utterly abandoned by yourself, alone, isolated, no one else around, no one else searching for you, no one else caring about you. That's hell. How many of you saw the TV show Alone this last fall? Anybody? It was really good. What they did was they took 12 guys and they says, the one who can remain the longest will get $1 million. Okay, so they took 12 men and they scattered them around Vancouver Island in the fall. And they were totally isolated. And they could only take only a couple of items. No communication with anyone. And it was fascinating to watch them walk out confident with a lot of bravado. By the end of the first night, one man called on a satellite phone, come and get me. Can't take it. It was just interesting watching what the sense of abandonment and aloneness can do to a person's psyche. It really twists them. It really deforms them. Fascinating thing. That's what hell is like. All of them said that the most difficult thing that they had to deal with was confronting who they really are. Scary thoughts. To think that maybe if I could get away from God, how freeing that would be. But yet, if I could get away from God, how terrifying that would be. That's what David's communicating. If I say, surely, the darkness will hide me and the light will become night around me. He's saying, even if I dive into the darkest places that my desires, my own sinful desires, could take me. We all know where those places would be. Take the most perverted thoughts that you have and say, if I could go there, surely God would not follow me. Surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me. God won't follow me there. But even in the darkness, will not... Hey guys! No worries, Lisa. Even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. I can't run anywhere from my presence, from your presence, God. There will be a time when you can. There will be a time when God will allow our darkness to consume us and hollow us out from the inside out. To be totally abandoned and isolated. But that's hell. Until then, there is grace. Until then, there is hope. Until then, there is redemption. All wrapped up in the very presence of God. Until then. It says, I can't hide my secrets from you. I can't run away from your presence. It says, you know me intimately. And it's wonderful yet terrifying. For you created my innermost being, my soul. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame will not be hidden from you when I was made in the secret place. When I was woven together in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed body. All my days are ordained for me, were written in the book, your book, before one of them ever came to being. He's saying, God, you know my strengths. You know my weaknesses. You know my vulnerabilities. You know my limits. You know my capacities. You know everything about me, God. You know my purpose. And even though you know it all, he makes a summary statement. He says, how precious to me are your thoughts about me, O God. How precious to me are your thoughts, and I insert about me, O God. Another translation puts it this way. How difficult it is for me to fathom your thoughts about me, O God. What he's saying, he says, I can't believe that you even like me. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you. When I want to run away in shame or pain or rebellion, God, you still care. Isn't that incredible? Isn't that incredible to think about that God, even in your most rebellious moments, in your most rebellious seasons, God still cares about you. And his thoughts are incredibly truthful and honest, but his thoughts look at you through the lens of grace and mercy. And he says, you are still my son. You're still my daughter. You are still mine. Think about that. Because of this, he won't throw in the towel. He says, God, you don't think about me the way I would think about me. If you thought about me the way I think about me, there would be no more hope. Right? But God, you think about me differently. And it's a good thing. And then he turns the corner and he makes a couple of statements which really, on the surface, don't make sense. But yet, when I think we correctly understand this psalm, makes total sense. If I can't get away from you, God, let me tell you what I think. If only you would slay the wicked, oh God. I don't know why you haven't. These guys are bullies to me. They are making my life miserable. Away from your adversaries misuse your name, and I don't know why you let them get away with it. Do I not hate them who hate you, O Lord, and abhor those who rise up against you? I have nothing but hatred for them. You get the sense that David's really been hurt by them? I count them as my enemies. Yet even as he says this, we're going to deal with this specifically in probably about 3 or 4 weeks when we get to the next season of our series on the Sermon on the Mount. But you get the sense that even as David voices this to God in his journal, you get the sense of, this is coming from a dark place within me. There's a lot of dark places within me. So he says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts, and see if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the everlasting way." Why does David land here? This incredible psalm is where he lands on these two verses. He says, "I'm not going to run away, but God, I realize that there's a lot of dark places within my own soul." Everyone has a story, and it's not the one they're telling. David knows that there are some very, very, very dark places within his own life. And he knows that if I am going to remain on this path with God, if I'm going to not throw in the towel and not try to run away from Him, if I'm going to maintain the course, God, You've got to do some work within me. You're going to have to do some deep, deep work. And he says, "Bring it on, because I don't want to run away." David wants what we all want. He wants to flourish. And he knows that the dark places within his own soul haunt him. And they sabotage his ability to be able to flourish with God. He's discovered what I have discovered and so many of us have discovered. It doesn't matter what you believe up here. What matters is not just this, but that we identify those dark areas which sabotage what we say we believe. We're going to be talking a lot about that in the coming months. He says, "I want to flourish, but I know to be able to flourish, it's going to take some divine work within me. Because otherwise, I'm just going to be playing the poser, and God, You know about that. Otherwise, I'm just going to be going in my own secret place to the very dark places. And You know that because I can't hide my secrets from You. You're going to see wherever I go, whatever I think. So God, if we're going to make this work, this is what it's going to take." He knows that if he's going to flourish, he must flourish with God and not run away from God. So he invites him to do some very, very hard work. And he says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart." He uses what's called the Cal imperative. He says, "Do it! Make it happen." He doesn't ask. He tells God, "Do the hard work. Come in and check out the very darkest places of my heart. Look anywhere you need to. Because that's where I need Your presence to be. That's where I need Your power to begin to change me from the inside out. Because I'm done trying to fake it till I make it. I'm tired of playing a poser. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me." He says, "Even if You have to, turn the heat up on my life." See, an image of a smelter where you turn up the heat and you let the sludge rise from the bottom where no one could see to the top, where the craftsman can take and scrape it off. If we're going to flourish, he says, "God, You need to turn up the heat. Feel free to raise up those things which I don't even know are there. Scrape it off. Test me. Bring it to the top and know my anxious thoughts, those thoughts which are duplicitous, where I have duplicity of motives. I say I'm doing it for this reason, but God, You and I both know it's over here. You and I both know it's over here." A couple of years ago, I went through a season where I was just really losing a lot of motivation for doing ministry, in all honesty. And I was on my way to Seattle and I was on the motorcycle. God, I said, I'm just really feeling demotivated. I'm just not feeling it. And I just need You to do something. And I asked myself the question, or maybe God asked me, I don't know, sometimes our thoughts get confused. but with all the other voices in my head, well, what did you used to want to do it for? And I realized that I used to want to do it. There's a huge part of my deep soul that says, I want to do this for me. I want to be successful. I want to be able to end my life saying, yes, I was successful. And I realized that I was never going to meet that standard. And so my motivation was starting to erode away. And God says, so what is a compelling reason for you to do this? Is my glory compelling enough for you? Is you doing this because I've asked you to do this good enough for you? You're doing this good enough for me? Do you want to do it just because you want to do it for me? And I thought, boy, there's a real absence of motivation there. I said, God, do a work in my own life. Restore that so that I'm not living out of a duplicitous life that I didn't even know I was living out of. Instead, God, take and do bring continuity, integrity, congruity between why I say I do something for the reason I do that something. That's what he's talking about. Bring congruity, wholeness to life, because you will never have shalom. You will never be able to flourish as long as we allow there to be duplicitous motives within us. Reveal my anxious thoughts. Expose the backstage lies. See if there's any offensive way in me. Offensive to who? David wasn't really concerned about anybody else. It was offensive to God. Is there any area of my heart, Father, he says, that really disappoints you, that really hurts you? Secrets that I've been hiding in the backstage. And lead me in the everlasting way. That is his ways, for his motives, for his reasons. It's the ways of wisdom that allow us to flourish. That's where David is. That's where David is do a redemptive work in my life, God. Not just by calling me to do religious things, but by leading me, in the path that you have, that isn't just have to do with the external presence of those around me, the job vocation that I do, but has to do with what you want to do deep within my own soul. That's what he's talking about. I want to invite Nate to come up and sing his song, because I thought with this passage, I've got to be able to have that. But keep these things in mind as David sings, as Nate sings in Tamina and shares this, and just say, God, is there anything in my life that's holding me back? Or maybe you realize, yeah, my life really stinks right now. My walk with Jesus really isn't where it needs to be, even though I've been playing the poser. You say, God, bring up whatever it is that you may begin to transform me from the inside out.
You knew me long before my life began, as I lay hidden in the dark, my story written. Not a day had come to pass. Fearfully and wonderfully crafted by your hand, you made me in my mother's womb. You saw my first day and my last. Precious are your thoughts for me. Great is your love. You have searched me. You have known me, God. Presence, you are every. before my life began as I lay hidden in the dark, my story written. Not a day had come to pass. Fearfully and wonderfully, wrapped it by your hand, you made me in my mother's womb. Saw my first day and my last. Precious are your thoughts for me. Sweet is your love. You have searched me. You have known me, God. Every thought from afar, where can I flee from your mighty presence? You are everywhere. How can I hide from your glory so great? To you, dark is light, and night is day. How can I hide from your glory so great? To you, dark is light, and night is day. How can I hide from your glory so great? To you, dark is light, and night is day. You have searched me. You have known me, God. Every thought from afar, cannot flee from your mighty presence. You are everywhere. You have searched me. Thoughts for me, oh God, like sin they can't be found. Precious are your thoughts for me. Precious are your thoughts for me, oh God, like sin they can't be found. Precious are your thoughts for me.
Thanks, Nate. You know, what's interesting is to realize as they stay up here and then the rest of the team comes forward is that this was a psalm that was written in the sense of in a real tension. And it was written as a part of a journal. I don't know that David ever thought anyone would ever see this. But yet God, in his providence, he allowed this and he orchestrated this one thing. He says, I'm going to take this psalm and I'm going to make it a part of the hymn book for my people. I'm going to turn it into a psalm of worship. Why would he do that? It's because worship is not supposed to be this pristine experience where we speak about the truths about God, but yet ignore the realities of this life. Our rebellion, our questions, our desires, both good and evil. We're not to come into worship with this duplicitous life, this incongruent life where I have my life out there, but then I have my life in here, where there is this disconnect. God wants his people and he calls his people to be a connected people in their souls, where there's not duplicity, but where we have the freedom to come into here and allow God, ask God to connect all the various discordant parts of our lives and of our souls. It says, bring them all together under my lordship, under my leadership, under my grace, under my hope for change. That is what worship is to be about. That is what worship is to be about. It's a messy, authentic place where we encounter God, where we wrestle with God, where we invite God into the mess, where we surrender to Him, where we worship Him. It's messy. And it's scary. Because I believe that as we engage in that process, even over this next year, it can be frightening to think that God cares about the darkest places of my life. He cares about the questions. And not only that, does He care about it, but He wants to enter into those areas with me. In the context of community, under the umbrella of worship. Because that's where we encounter Him, and that's where we find freedom. That's where we realize, I don't have to be a slave anymore to those hidden places where I go to, those far places where I run to. I don't have to be that anymore. God wants to integrate it all into a whole, where we can experience in progressive and ever-deepening ways, shalom. God's peace and our flourishing. But it will never happen if we have our life out there and then we have our life in here and never shall the two touch. Never shall we involve God into my life out there. Never do I invite God to change my life, what's out there, to become more and more conformed to His everlasting ways. Is that what you want? That's a journey, isn't it? That's a journey. Father, I pray that as we go throughout this next year of 2016, Lord, that You would bring about that reality where there would be less and less duplicitous living in my life, in our lives, Lord, that You would indeed search us, know us, test us, so that You might lead us in Your everlasting ways. Father, may fear have no place in this, but may we experience greater and greater freedom. In all God's people said, let's all stand.